Welcome to the Jazz Treasury. My name is Rich Sylvester, and that was Round Midnight, performed by the one and only Thelonious Monk. And that was recorded in 1947 in New York City, and it's one of Monk's first recordings of the tune that expanded this fame beyond the small circle of musicians actually playing with him. It was already a standard by the 1950s. The arrangement here is like a mini concerto, as Monk assigns the melody to the piano with occasional interjections and backing figures from the two horns. The record was originally issued as Roundabout Midnight. And we have some fine personnel on that one. Small group, the Thelonious Monk Quintet, with George Flip Tate on trumpet, Sahib Shahab on alto sax, Thelonious Monk on piano, Bob Page on bass, and the one and only Art Blakey on drums. If you're new to jazz, check out Art Blakey. Today's program, we look at the music and the lives of Thelonious Monk and Bud Powell, two phenomenal pianists. Thelonious Monk and Bud Powell are the two most influential figures in modern jazz piano playing of the last 50 years. Naturally, their stories are interlinked, and they influenced each other in subtle ways. Even among bebop musicians, then a small minority in the jazz world, Monk and Powell were outsiders. Their frequently unhappy and even tragic histories are an important counterpoint to the brilliant music that they made. Jazz has always thrived on rivalry and comparisons. When two or more players reach their peak at around the same time, Louis Armstrong and Bix Beiderbecke, for example, or Coleman Hawkins and Lester Young, the music tends to take a leap forward. In the piano arena, you might choose to compare Art Tatum and Duke Ellington, like the other pairs, linked but distant. In the brave new world of post-war jazz, though, it was Thelonious Monk and Bud Powell, two men whose lives and music are related in several ways, who made this kind of impact on their fellow performers. Although there was a dramatic difference between their music and that of the swing era, both of them revered their predecessors. Powell loved Art Tatum, while his own playing acknowledged Nat King Cole, Earl Hines, and Billy Kyle of the John Kirby Sextet. Monk also loved Tatum, along with Teddy Wilson, Willie the Lion Smith, James P. Johnson, and Ellington. Neither man was particularly involved with narcotics, unlike Charlie Parker and a number of his followers, but they both cultivated the detached air associated with addicts and were very cut off from the world around them. The world was changing. The attitude of a new generation of black Americans, exacerbated by tensions of World War II, led some to early expressions of militancy and others to try and divorce themselves from the values of white society. Earning a living in the music business, however, meant being dependent on whites, either as listeners or as middlemen. Although it provided an escape from the ghetto, a life in music created its own tensions. Thelonious Sphere Monk II was Powell's elder by 7 years. He was born in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, on October 10, 1917. And by the time he was five, the family had moved to the San Juan Hill area of New York, where Lincoln Center now stands. Thelonious made his first mark on the jazz scene when he was hired by former bandleader Teddy Hill in 1940 to play in the house quartet at Minton's. He stayed there until 1943, and his beret and goatee beard became the unofficial uniform of the beboppers. Already a stimulating, if unorthodox, accompanist, he worked on original chord sequences and compositions that intrigued sitters in, such as Charlie Christian and Dizzy Gillespie at the club's famous After Hours Jams. When the quartet's drummer, Kenny Clark, took a group down to 52nd Street in late 1942, Monk was the pianist, and he was also hired for Coleman Hawkins's sextet in 1944 to 1945. In a foretaste of hostility to come, Monk was frequently accused of pianistic incompetence. But Hawk persevered with him until Monk declined to travel to the West Coast, preferring to stay in New York. Time for another track. Here's another classic, Well, You Needn't, another Thelonious Monk tune. This is by an even smaller group, Thelonious Monk's Trio, featuring Thelonious on piano, Gene Rainey on bass, and Art Blakey on drums, recorded in 1947 in New York City. Let's listen to Thelonious Monk's Well, You Needn't. Thelonious Monk and his trio, Well You Needn't, New York City, 1947. Monk's technical abilities seem slightly stodgy when compared with Powell's, although it does not deserve the incompetent label given him by many musicians. He gets around the keyboard niftily, but on strange trajectories that others would not have attempted. The gaps between phrases are clearly, perfectly deliberate. His rapport with Art Blakey, who had recently left the Billy Eckstine band, shows in the sympathetic punctuations throughout the track. Eric Rudolph Bud Powell was a native New Yorker born on the 27th of September, 1924. He also played in church and had two brothers and a strongly authoritarian father who, despite being a stride player himself, took great pride in young Bud's prize-winning excellence in European classical music. Powell got to know Monk around 1940. The older man took Powell to Minton's, and Bud became the first person to study Monk's compositions. As a result of his growing reputation, even before he turned 19, Bud was hired by trumpeter Cootie Williams and toured with him for a year and a half. So while Monk's career was slow, Bud's lurched dramatically from musical highs to personal lows. Persistent headaches drove him to drink. He spent 13 months in hospital in 1947 through 1948, and three more months the following year, and in 1951 he was arrested in the company of Monk on a trumped-up drugs possession charge. Thelonious pleaded guilty. This was apparently an attempt to spare his friend imprisonment. Bud, though, was put through a battery of psychiatric observation tests and committed to an institution. He remained there for 17 months and was given repeated electric shock treatments. Monk served 2 months in prison. On his release, he found he could no longer find work in New York. A licensing system meant that the police department had jurisdiction over the employment in such venues. And despite this setback, he continued to live in the city with his wife, mother, and two children, Barbara and Thelonious III. Bud became even more predisposed to drink after a 1956 road accident that killed his younger brother, pianist Richie Powell, and trumpeter Clifford Brown. However, a first trip to Europe later that year with the Birdland All-Stars eventually led to a return visit to France in late 1957, and sufficient work offers to enable Bud and Buttercup to emigrate to Paris early in 1959. Meanwhile, Monk was finally getting successful in the land of his birth. Gigs at the Newport Jazz Festival in 1958 and 59, the former immortalized in the film Jazz on a Summer's Day, and at New York's Town Hall gave a positive, almost lovable spin to his oddball image. Just 5 years later, he was sufficiently well known to have his picture on the cover of the news magazine Time, only the third jazzman after Brubeck and Ellington to receive this honor. All right, time to listen to a little Bud Powell. And this is the Dexter Gordon Quintet, recorded in New York, 1946, with Leonard Graham on trumpet, Dexter Gordon on tenor, Bud Powell on piano, Dylan Curley Russell on bass, and Max Roach playing the drums. For you folks just getting into jazz, check out Dexter Gordon and check out Max Roach as well. So let's listen to the Dexter Gordon Quintet with Bud Powell on piano, doing Dexter Rides Again.
You're listening to the Jazz Treasury Podcast with Rich Sylvester.
Dexter Rides Again, New York City, 1946, Bud Powell on piano, Max Roach on drums. That tune is closely related, consciously or not, to Monk's Well You Needn't, and is mainly a vehicle for some excellent early Gordon saxophone, spurred on by some rhythm section that recorded as the Bud Powell Trio. As when he played with Parker, Bud gives his all during the brief piano solo that is in many ways the highlight of the whole piece. And later on we'll hear Charlie Parker playing with Bud Powell. So after living in Paris for a while, his daughter Celia, now 16, and her mother moved back to New York. The reunion with his family was not enough, though, to protect him from well-wishers or keep him on the wagon. In the space of less than 2 years, Bud fell through all the safety nets provided by family, friends, managers, and public services. He contracted pneumonia and died on the 31st of July, 1966. Other causes listed on the death certificate included cirrhosis of the liver, tuberculosis, and malnutrition. No one knows what Thelonious thought of his friend's demise, but Bud may well have died at the right time for his reputation. While Monk's popularity among fans remained high in the 1960s, the jazz market was slowly but surely contracting. The increasing urban unrest as the civil rights movement intensified in the mid-1960s led to a sharp fall in nightclub attendees. While many record companies, seeing the sales of rock music and soul far outstripping those of jazz, lost interest. Monk's work with his quartet petered out in early 1973, and he announced that he would not appear in nightclubs anymore. He was as good as his word, and with the exception of four New York concert hall engagements between 1974 and 1976, never played in public again. Although he was briefly hospitalized for his depression, he was saved from the kind of treatments that helped destroy Bud Powell's life by moving into the home of Nikki de Koenigswarter, the jazz baroness. He died there on February 17th, 1982. All right, let's go back. Let's go back to Ruby, My Dear, another classic. This one is by the Thelonious Monk Trio once again, and with the same personnel, with Gene Rainey on bass and Art Blakey on drums, recorded New York City, 1947. Let's listen to Ruby, My Dear by Thelonious Monk on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. will be my dear. Thelonious Monk. Monk's second best ballad, Ruby, had the alternative title, Manhattan Moods. Simpler and perhaps more lyrical than Round Midnight, it worked well in two later Monk recordings featuring Coleman Hawkins and John Coltrane, and was reputedly a favorite of Charlie Parker's. The pianist solos all the way, and even the most astringent interjections enhance rather than destroy the feeling of the piece. Ruby, my dear. The musical achievements of both Monk and Powell are not in doubt, although their individual reputations fall short of what they deserve. As an illustration of this, there are no full-length biographies in English of either Thelonious or Budd. Both, though, have been immortalized on film. Monk is the subject of a fine documentary, Straight No Chaser, in which Powell also appears briefly. Round Midnight is named after the Monk tune, but is based on the story of Budd's life in Paris and his tragic return to New York. It is undoubtedly the finest fictional screen treatment of a jazz character. Budd was recognized early on his being a brilliant performer, whose glittering sound and intense improvisations quickly became the pianistic equivalent of Charlie Parker's alto. As such, he influenced every single keyboard player who followed. Monk was first accepted as a composer. It was only after understanding his compositions that listeners realized they were most perfectly expressed by his piano style. While relatively few pianists tried to emulate this distinctive style, jazz giants such as Miles Davis, Sonny Rollins, and John Coltrane all spoke of their admiration for his compositional methods. All right, last track. Let's listen to Buzzy. I promised Charlie Parker, and here is a Charlie Parker quintet. And this was recorded in New York City, 1947. Miles Davis on the trumpet here, Charlie Parker on alto, Budd Powell on piano, Tommy Potter on bass, and Max Roach on drums. Let's listen to Buzzy, Charles Parker Quintet, featuring Miles Davis, Charlie Parker, and Budd Powell on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. That was Charlie Parker and his quintet, Buzzy. Art Blakey, who played with them both, once said, "I think there was a time when Bud Powell was playing more than Charlie Parker." This is an illustration of what he meant as, in addition to the intensity of Parker, Bud manages to equal his invention in a brief solo of gem-like brilliance. The young Miles Davis, clearly somewhat overawed, was later influenced by Monk in discovering his own originality. That's the last track on this episode of the Jazz Treasury with Rich Sylvester. Thank you so much for listening in. Some recommended listening for you, whether you're a connoisseur or brand new to the genre of jazz. Here are four recordings to look for. The Amazing Bud Powell, Volume 1, 1949 to 1951. The Quintet Jazz at Massey Hall, 1953. Brilliant Corners, 1956. And Thelonious Monk with John Coltrane, 1957. Well, thank you very much for listening. And next time on the Jazz Treasury, we're visiting Britain. Jazz in Britain. And don't forget to go to Facebook, give us a like, make some suggestions, some recommendations. We'd like to hear from you. Tell everybody about the Jazz Treasury. If they want to learn more about jazz, little insights into the history of jazz, that's what the Jazz Treasury is all about. It is indeed a treasury. Thanks for listening. Till next time, Rich Sylvester is saying, enjoy the jazz.